let's see, I have a couple questions for you here. First, I wanted to tell you that I really did enjoy the book a lot. And I didn't totally expect to, just because I'm not a bodybuilder at all. So I was thinking, you know, how much in here is going to be for me. But I really felt like there was a lot of just neat stuff, and the like just the amount of passion that you have in the writing, and the way that you're just so passionate about veganism and animals and all that stuff, it just kind of made me really want to be better at the stuff that I do and just be a better vegetarian and maybe vegan. And so yeah, I really enjoyed it for all those reasons.
Oh, cool! Thank you so much. I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, of course. So, I guess what I wanted to know, or I know the answer, but I wanted you to tell readers how come you're vegan, because what I usually see is with vegan athletes is that people say, well, being vegan makes me better at this sport because it's more energy and all that stuff, but I wasn't quite sure that that was your fundamental reason for doing it, so can you just tell everyone what those reasons are?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's not a reason at all for me. As you know from the book, and as readers will find out, I became vegan for animal rights reasons purely. I grew up on a farm, and my older sister became vegan before me at a young age, probably when she was, I don't know, 12 or 13, something like that. And she was organizing an animal rights week at my high school. Maybe she was 15 when she became vegan, I'm not sure. But anyway, at a young age, she decided to look at animals a little bit differently and look at food differently. And part of that was growing up in the 4-H program and raising animals and getting to know them, and they had first names, and we interacted with them, spent a lot of time with them, and then at the end of the summer would take them to the auction in 4-H and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't really understand that they were being sold for food, and they wouldn't go to, you know, happy homes where they would continue on with their first names and everything else that,
right,
that we knew them as.
Right.
So she became vegan at a young age and organized this Animal Rights Week in my high school, and that was probably the most important day of my life. December 8th, 1995 is when I attended that and decided that just for that week I would, you know, out of respect for my older sister, Tanya, I would be vegetarian, mm-hmm, or vegan or whatever that meant, or at least I would go to this Animal Rights Week and see what it's all about. And on that day, December 8th, 1995, I saw videos of factory farming and animal testing, and I mean, I still remember them specifically, and that was 15 years ago. I remember the videos that I saw. Woody Harrelson was in one of those videos that was about Gillette and their animal testing practices,
with
rabbits specifically, I remember it. And, you know, just listening to speakers, kind of like what I do now around the country, and reading literature, I decided that I no longer wanted to contribute to the cruelty and suffering to animals, and I was going to go vegan right away.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. And like a lot of people, it didn't work very well. And even with all the passion and enthusiasm I had for it, I was 15 years old, so I didn't have a lot of my own money and didn't know what I was supposed to eat, and I wasn't eating really healthy food anyway, because that's what we do when we're 15.
Right, right.
And so I just cut out all the meat stuff, which I was going to sandwich shops and fast food places on a regular basis with my friends. And I cut all that stuff out, but I didn't necessarily replace it with much at all. I mean, really, my diet was, I think, some cereal and soy milk in the morning and then some bread rolls as a snack during the day at school, and then bagels and chips and salsa for lunch, and with some natural soda, maybe some candy, and then something like a pasta or tofu something at dinner, and that was it. Not a lot of real food. In fact,
right,
I don't think I mentioned a single whole food there, but it was all still vegan. And it took me a little while to figure some things out, but ultimately I stuck with it and continued on, and then I organized Animal Rights Week 2 years later and got heavily involved in that aspect of activism and outreach and continued on from there.
Okay. So then would you say that it's, I mean, it's certainly a challenge in what you now do with the bodybuilding, but so would you say that it's not something that makes you necessarily a better bodybuilder? It's just something that you, that, I mean, is it strictly for the reasons you just mentioned? And it's kind of a challenge to overcome in bodybuilding, or would you say there's any benefit at all in the bodybuilding?
Oh, no, I see it as a benefit for sure, and I've been arguing that when I give talks around the country. I argued it yesterday in in a post on Facebook, actually, when the question was posed to me. But just for me, that's what, I mean, I wouldn't change anything going away from veganism, if it were
right
to, you know, benefit me in the sport of bodybuilding or anything like that. So my absolute fundamental reasons for veganism are still animal rights based. But I do believe there is an athletic benefit, kind of like what you mentioned earlier, where there is this usually increase of energy. And the way I look at it is this. You take anybody you want. Let's say you could take an NFL lineman, okay, 300-pound guy, whatever. Let's say you take any one of these athletes. We'll just use the NFL lineman, for example, because I've used that in some talks. And let's say maybe he's eating 6,000 calories a day. Mm-hmm. Animal-based food, all kinds of food, just a mixture. And you put that athlete on a 100% vegan diet, and as long as you don't change that caloric intake, you leave that at 6,000.
Right.
And you don't change the macronutrient breakdown, the percentage of protein, carbohydrates, and fats. You don't alter that. You just put in plant-based whole foods that, you know, fit these percentages of protein, fats, and carbohydrates, then that athlete should not experience any adverse effects from this new diet. What they should experience is a byproduct of increased energy, very likely an increase in recovery, and they'll probably smile more and be a little bit, be a little bit happier, I think.
Right, right. And I'm sure there's also, as you mentioned, there was kind of a long-term health benefit to that also.
Oh, absolutely. There's that.
Go ahead.
That's one of the biggest things is the long-term benefit. I mean, you get rid of all this baggage that comes with cholesterol, saturated fat, toxins, hormones, all these other things. You cut that out. Here's the biggest thing, and this is, I write about it in my book. I hope I address it enough. I certainly do when I give talks in the recent months especially, is that the problem is with a lot of athletes, many of them will adopt a plant-based diet, right? So let's say they're eating 5,000 calories. And so they know exactly what they're not supposed to eat, and so they know they're not supposed to eat the animal-based foods. They cut all those out, but they don't always replace in full the amount of calories that were cut out. And so this athlete eating 5,000 calories may drop down to, let's say, 3,000, and then wonder why they have less energy or maybe less muscle tone or less muscle mass or less strength, and they're just totally confused. But there's a very, very clear, concrete reason why that is.
Yeah.
Because there's a reduction in calories, a reduction in energy.
Right.
Therefore, there's consequences. And that happens, I think, more than almost anything else. The other thing that happens is that anytime we change our diet dramatically, we feel a need to, you know, ease into something, maybe take a break from exercise because, oh, I'm changing. Instead of eating all this protein, or at least what we associate with protein, instead of eating all this animal food, now I'm going to eat a plant-based diet. I need to give it a week or two to adjust to it and things like that. And then we wonder why we maybe lost weight or lost muscle mass or lost muscle tone. Well, there's, again, a very clear, concrete reason, because we stopped exercising. We stopped going to the gym. And sometimes, in fact, very, very often, I think, that combination is paired together, where as an athlete, we cut out all these foods we don't want to eat. We don't replace those with the proper calories or even the nutrient breakdown of the similar percentages of protein, carbohydrates, and fats, and we stop exercising on top of that. And then, what do you think the byproduct is? You know, it's less energy, more fatigue, confusion of why isn't this working? Okay, maybe it's not for me, and I give up, kind of thing.
Right.
And but that's what I try to talk to people about when I give talks. But yeah, absolutely, bodybuilders, football players, it's not just for endurance athletes who clearly thrive on a plant-based diet, runners, cyclists, etc. But it's anybody if you just take the time to do it right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty consistent with other things that I've read. I mean, as long as you're replacing those calories exactly, then there's no reason you should have any sort of detriment to your performance.
Yeah, exactly. And you're getting the primary source of nutrition rather than the secondary source, which,
right,
you know, me did the secondary source of plant foods consumed and then turned into muscle, etc.
Right. So you just mentioned endurance running, and that was my next thing. In the book, you just really quickly mentioned that you used to be an elite endurance runner. Is that correct?
Yeah, I ran NCAA collegiate cross country out in Oregon State. It was a smaller program, obviously, than the University of Oregon, which is national championship team, but we still got to compete against the University of Oregon and, you know, everyone from Penn State, Hawaii, et cetera, and travel with the team. So yeah, I was an endurance athlete. That's how I got started in sports. I was a runner for years, as well as soccer player and everything else. Bodybuilding came years later when I just really went back to what my passion was as a kid of being like a He-Man type, Captain Planet type figure. So yeah, running was a big part of my life.
Okay. And did you, during that time, did you lift weights at all? Did you find that helped you or was necessary?
No, I didn't lift weights at all. I just ran and I ran and I ran. I was always one of these go-getter type people, and I recorded everything, recorded all my miles and I just hit the ground running, literally, and I just ran, you know. I just really enjoyed it. But then one day I just stopped, and I was pretty good at it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I got burned out, maybe I just wanted a break from it. But I really just got into the sport of bodybuilding and realized that running wasn't real conducive to adding a lot of muscle mass. And I figured a more efficient way to do that would be to stop running and just lift weights, which is what I did.
Right. And do you get the same thrill from the bodybuilding competition as you do from you know, running a race?
Yeah, it's really different. I mean, running is its own unique experience, and I have run a couple times since, you know, I ran a 5K not too long ago, a few years ago, and it was really my first competitive race. I hadn't run in about 5 years. At all, really. I mean, not even, like, jogging down the trail. And just that competitive nature and enjoyment came back, and I actually did really well. I ended up beating the defending champion and got like second major group and fifth overall in a race that I thought I was going to stop after about 800 meters and I was hurting after 800 meters for sure, but I expected 8 minute miles and trying to finish without having to walk, and my first mile was 5 something, and so I just kept going. So it kind of came back, and it was really a fun experience. I wrote about that on my website years ago. I wrote like a 3-page article about what that was like to not run for so many years and still have that competitive fire that, even though I'm not physically trained for it, or I have really no business physically on that course, especially with those who run every single day and are competitive and pretty good, but I, you know, there's that aspect of willpower that doesn't show up on paper, that doesn't show up, you know, just looking at somebody. So, you know, I got a huge thrill from running, and bodybuilding has provided me with an incredible thrill of competition. Training is a lot different. Sometimes it's not the most exciting thing. Sometimes it's very exciting. You know, when you set a new record lift, it's just like getting a PR running 800 meter splits or something like that, or 1,000 meter splits and timing those. I get that experience from weightlifting too, and competing is just an incredible experience that I even mentioned in the book. I wish people could experience it once in their life to see what it's like to work that hard, where every single aspect of what you've done in the gym is being judged by an audience, whether they're the actual judges or just fans in the audience, where everything that you've worked for is kind of being evaluated, and you kind of put everything on the line and reveal what you've done, you know, in months of preparation or years of preparation. And that's a really unique experience too.
Right. That's neat. And is there the fact that your actual performance on the competition day is so different from what you trained to do, right? Because you trained lifting weights, and when you perform, you're not actually lifting weights, you're just being up on stage posing, right?
Exactly. Posing and flexing, contracting muscles and trying to reveal a physique of balance and symmetry and muscle size and conditioning definition and all these different factors.
Yeah.
So
it sounds so different from just like, you know, traditional sports. I think you're right that it probably would be really beneficial to just see one, to see how it all goes.
Yeah, it's more of a, you know, it's a it's more like an artistic performance of sorts.
Uh-huh.
Because you're right, you're not up there showing how much you can lift. No one cares how much you can lift. It's more like, I don't know, ice skating or gymnastics, where it's a subjective sport based on the audience's or the judge's perception
mm-hmm.
of what they deem as ideal or I guess as close to perfect as possible within that judging criteria, and you just get as close as you can to what they're looking for, and an audience member may think you finished first, but the judges put you in third. That's just the same with ice skating. You never know exactly mm-hmm. how your performance is going to be judged, but you do the best you can with as few flaws as possible.
Right. Interesting. Okay, so let's see. You said you didn't lift weights when you were a runner, but what do you think about that? I mean, the idea of lifting weights for sports that you certainly don't want too much mass for. Just kind of, in what ways does that differ from the way you'd lift for bodybuilding? I think you mentioned once about the kind of manual labor type lifts, and I know that's kind of becoming popular with kind of these different kinds of gyms nowadays. So I just wanted to get your
thoughts
on lifting for sports versus more for muscle size.
Yeah, no, I think running, lifting weights has its benefits for any sport because you have that strength in the muscle to draw upon. I mean, how hard is it to run uphill toward the end of a race? It's pretty challenging, but if you have that muscle strength and the muscles are used to that lunging type movement or squatting type movement or the impact or the stress on them, I think really the stronger you are, the better. I know my friend Brendan Brazier, who you met recently, said something in my video that we filmed together years ago, where you want the muscle to be as strong as possible without having to add all the extra mass to carry around as a runner. So if you can just maximize the muscle strength, and obviously strength doesn't always go hand in hand with mass. I mean, there's a lot of very small people by height and weight who are incredibly powerful and strong. So if you can get their muscles to be really, really strong, I think that benefits runners and all athletes.
Right. Okay,
I think
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think you can just do wonderful things for preventing injury, for drawing upon something a little bit deeper when you run out of a lot of lung capacity and endurance and you start to just really get fatigued. I think the muscle strength can kind of take over a little bit and push you a little further.
Right, right. So, practically, I mean, I realize it's kind of getting away a little bit maybe from what your area of expertise is, but, I mean, what type, it just seems like most lifting that people do is kind of descended from, like most strength programs seem to be descended from bodybuilding or powerlifting programs where you're isolating muscle groups. I mean, do you have any sort of tips for people who are trying to lift for an endurance sport, just the basic types of lifts you should be doing? I mean, high reps, low reps, weight, anything like that?
Yeah, I think first you want to really target the muscles you'll be using the most. And I know running does, you know, the arms are involved, but it's primarily your legs are doing the brunt of the work and maybe core a little bit as well, but it's basically, I would do a lot of the lunges and leg presses and squats and things like that are directly related to the sport and the action that the muscles make during that activity. And, you know, I would do probably like a moderate to high rep range. I think when you get really in the low reps and super powerful heavy movements, you start focusing a little more on muscle mass and power and strength. But when you do more like the, I don't know, 10 to 12 to 15, 20 type rep range, you know, it's a little more of strength building and conditioning and even getting into aerobic type training to some degree, especially if it's really high reps.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is probably a better way to go. I mean, I don't see a real need in doing a lot of low-rep power stuff for endurance athletes. That's usually more reserved for the strength athlete, explosive maybe sprinters, football players, et cetera, but endurance athletes.
Right.
I think high reps is a much better way to go, using those muscle groups that are, you know, going to be engaged in the exercise.
Okay, gotcha. So one of the lines I really liked in your book was when you said, shut up and squat. Because it just seems to be like, the squat just seems, you know, in the time that I have spent in the gym, the squat does seem to be just kind of the king of all the exercises. Do you have a favorite one? Like, I know there's front squats now and these overhead squats and things like that. Is there a certain one you like above the others?
You know, I just like regular barbell squats. And you know, I have some back injuries I've been dealing with and overcoming, and so I haven't been able to do them very much. So I've had to do some variations recently myself with some one-legged squats and bodyweight squats and dumbbell squats. You know, I had to just change it up a little bit. But in general, I think just a regular traditional barbell squats with a good solid range of motion is one of the best things we can do, because it's a compound exercise involving multiple joints, so many different muscle groups. The total body exercise, the abs are engaged, the legs, of course, and butt, and upper body, torso, back, arms, shoulders. You know, it's all it's all there supporting the weight and in the movement. So so I think just regular squats with a deep, you know, pretty deep range of motion is one of the best things we can do for overall strength, power, muscle mass, muscle size, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good. Yeah, it certainly feels like it. I mean, those are always the part that I dread of any kind of, you know, little strength routine that I'm doing. But, you know, definitely tell that they do the most.
And I think the things we dread are often the things that are the best for us.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times we not want to do lunges or not want to do squats or not want to, you know, do the hill repeats or whatever. These are the hardest things that challenge us the most. You know, oftentimes we benefit the most. And I think that's true outside of the athletic world as well. I think academically and career-wise and everything else, it's outside of our comfort zone where we can really benefit if we dare to go out there.
Right. All right. Well, I wanted to shift away from the lifting and just talk a little bit about nutrition and stuff like that. But real quick, while we're talking, you know, while you're talking about, you know, challenging yourself and stuff like that, the amount of inspiration that comes through in your writing was just really amazing to me. And I wondered if you, I'm kind of into like Tony Robbins and all that kind of self-help and listening to motivational tapes and all that. Are you in any of that kind of stuff, or is it just kind of all come from within for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Yes, I am interested in that area, and I've heard of some of these names, but I've never read a single book in the personal development community outside of How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which I read 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it almost all comes from within. I've been that way since I was a kid, just highly motivated. I had to be the fastest runner in elementary school. I had to be number one with a mile run in middle school. You know, I had to work the hardest academically, in wrestling practice. Whenever they would say do 20 pull-ups, I always had to do more. I couldn't just do, even still today, I can't just do like 20 push-ups or 25. I always have to do an odd number, like 27. I have to push it a little bit further. I just do, and actually, funny you mention that, I wrote 200-300-page personal development books before I wrote this book.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I found that interesting, too.
Yeah, do personal best and take action and make it happen. They're not printed yet, but they were written in 2008, 2009, and I have an agent in New York, and we've been shopping them around, and I think with the success of the Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness book, it will give us a lot more leverage to show that, yes, these principles do work that I write about in the other books, and
uh-huh.
Here's the byproduct of that. Here's the success of that with this, you know, niche industry. Most people think it's an oxymoron type title of a book. It's moving thousands of copies at a very fast pace.
Uh-huh.
And so there's reasons why that is. There's reasons why the book is doing well, and you know, I write about that in my other books. So, yeah, I'm definitely familiar with that community, but I've never read anything by Tony Robbins, never read anything by anybody else.
Uh-huh.
I just find my own ways.
Oh, that's neat.
And that's, why, and, that's, And that was the most exciting thing about writing those 200-300-page books is that I hadn't read anything else. And so I couldn't just copy Wayne Dyer or whatever his name is, or Tony Robbins or Zig Ziglar, whoever's out there. I didn't know, I've never read any of their stuff. And so all my stuff is, you know, it's unique to me. We may have come to some of the same conclusions,
right?
Which I'm interested in actually reading some of their stuff once mine get printed. But the really unique part is discovering that on your own, I think, and that's what I think is going to make those books pretty special, is that they didn't come from extracting all these different ideas from these different people who have already been saying this or doing that. There's things that I've experienced in my own life the last 20 years that I've been really observant of and aware of it.
Right. Well, that's neat. I'll be interested to read those books, because I hadn't, you know, so much of stuff in that niche seems to be kind of the same information, just regurgitated a different way. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting. I'm excited to read those now. Okay, so I guess that is enough about that sort of stuff. Nutrition, though. I'm not going to ask you where you got your protein and where you get your protein, because I know you don't like that, and you have that list, which is a great resource, and I'll be sure to link to that in this post. But I found it interesting that you say that everyone needs more protein than most sources will recommend. Not everyone, but everyone, bodybuilders especially, and probably I would guess you'd say the same thing about most athletes. When a lot of the other people in the vegan vegetarian community sort of question those guidelines and say, well, they're only that high because of meat industry lobbying and things like that. We really don't need that much. So I found it interesting that you said that we need more.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely go against the popular trend, and I get that, you know, all the time when I give talks. People say, like, I hear people say to me, I'm so glad you're here because when I talk to you, think you need all kinds of protein, and I kind of stop them, and I say, well, actually, I do follow that philosophy. I just talk about plant-based protein, not animal protein, but as an athlete, as a strength athlete, we certainly do, and here's what I tell people, is that in general, the protein question shouldn't even come up. I mean, it's laughable that it even comes up for vegans, vegetarians, anybody else. For the average person who just goes to work and lives their life and doesn't do very much, it's a complete non-issue.
Right.
It's silly to even think about whether that person's getting enough protein because they're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into some other athletes, and you may move into endurance athletes, and there's, you know, there's some sort of increase needed because of some, you know, muscle damage that's happened through that sport activity. But you know, in general, you're going to want probably a lot of carbohydrates to replace a lot of, you know, fuel that's been used up through endurance and aerobic activity that's carried on for an hour or longer. So maybe carbohydrates and fats are pretty, you know, pretty common replenishing tool with protein in there as well. But then when you get into really power sports like weightlifting, bodybuilding, I don't know, also fighting, wrestling, football, boxing, those types of things, where especially weightlifting, where there's an incredible amount of stress being put on the muscle fibers and all kinds of damage being done to muscle tissue and muscle fibers, just creating micro tears throughout muscle all over the body, there is a dramatic increase in need for protein intake, amino acid intake, in order to recover, repair, and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, for those outside of the bodybuilding world, it's probably hard to even understand that. But within the bodybuilding world, it's basically almost impossible to gain a lot of muscle mass and strength that's required in bodybuilding on a low protein diet or moderate protein diet. That's just seemingly the way it is. It's that the more protein consumed, the bigger the muscles get, the stronger one gets, the better recovery from the intense weight training activity, etc. And I've And I found that to be true in my life, not just the total calories that are needed, but really the amount of protein consumed. I can go from weighing 170 pounds to 195 pounds, you know, based on how I fluctuate my protein consumption, and that along with the training.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I actually do promote a heavier amount of protein, because that is the only way I was able to add 75 pounds from 120 pounds that I became vegan up to 195 pounds, and the only way I'm able to maintain a heavier physique or stronger physique on a vegan diet, or on any diet, I mean, is with high protein consumption.
So certainly people who do endurance sports will want to adjust this, but what amount do you recommend, like per body weight, per pound of body weight?
Yeah, you know, for bodybuilding, I think probably 1 to 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. I know a lot of people use kilograms when they use their whatever conversions, but so really, I mean, as a 185-pound, 190-pound bodybuilder, I was doing upper 200s to, you know, 300 grams of protein a day, which sounds ridiculous to most people, but it did amazing things for me in bodybuilding.
Wow.
It allowed me to win competitions, to be strong, and to be able to do all these different things. And it's actually not even, I mean, that's not even that much, really, I don't think, in the bodybuilding world. I mean, a lot of people are doing 400 grams, 500 grams, 600 grams. But it's when they're doing the whey-based protein, casein-based protein, animal meat-based protein, that's where you start to run into different problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I even talked to T. Colin Campbell from the China Study recently, because I was asking, I said, well, what about this increase in plant protein, you know, percentages being pretty high? Is that, because we know it has adverse effects when you take a bunch of animal protein. It just does. It can speed up cancer growth, it can turn on cancer growth, it can lead to all these different problems with animal-based protein. I said, is there anything we really need to worry about with a high consumption of plant-based protein? And his response was no, there hasn't been anything that shows adverse effects from eating, eating a higher percentage of plant-based protein. It's really the animal protein where the health problems come in.
Oh, interesting.
And I think, I mean, to me, it just makes sense if you're doing a ton of physical work. Like, I train just one little muscle group for over an hour at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy with heavy weights, intensity, a lot of pain, you know, not injury pain, but, you know, pain from the struggle of lifting the weights, that a ton of protein is going to be required to help repair that damage that leaves us sore for days and days and days and days. And so it's not just like consumption of protein just for the sake of consuming it. It's to make it go to use, to go to work. And if we don't, then I believe we set ourselves up for a risk of potential injury, because all we're doing in the gym is creating micro tears in muscle fiber. We're damaging muscle, and if we don't repair that nutritionally with amino acids and proteins, and, you know, go back again, we open ourselves up to some sort of muscle damage or injury as a result.
Yeah, that makes sense. So carbohydrate, you seem to recommend a lot of starchy carbohydrates, or at least you like them for yourself. And I found that interesting because compared to, like, the Brendan Brazier stuff, he's much more a fan of the sugary carbs, just because they seem to be more easily digested and converted to energy. Is that something that you think is specific to bodybuilding, or just kind of a personal thing, or any idea?
Yeah, I think both. I think it's we're very different in our approaches, and I want to be eating foods that are really, really heavy, because I want to gain a lot of weight and be really, you know, and have a lot of mass. And so the heavier weight that I can consume, like potatoes and yams, things like that, are really, really helpful for me, and they're also oftentimes slow-releasing carbohydrates to provide energy for a very long time, taking a little bit longer to digest. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily concerned about quick digestion of fruit and other, you know, quick-releasing sugary carbohydrates, unless it's before a workout. And so I do a lot of bananas, apples, grapes, whatever before a workout, but afterwards, I want to eat a lot of heavy stuff by weight, by calories, and eating these really fulfilling meals for muscle recovery and for bodybuilding. So things like the heavier stuff really work well for me. The rice, the quinoa, the oats, the yams, potatoes, those kinds of things are definitely on the menu, not just for me, but they're some of the most popular bodybuilding foods, period.
Uh-huh.
When bodybuilders are surveyed of what their, just mainstream bodybuilders, what their main food sources are, I mean, two of the first three are vegan foods. I think they're oats and rice.
Oh, really?
And they usually have some sort of meat. You know, they maybe chicken is on their list, and then even just very shortly down the line, you start seeing yams and potatoes, very common foods in bodybuilding, and then you get into maybe more of the green foods way down the list after eggs and everything else.
Right.
But rice and oats are some of the most popular foods in bodybuilding, period.
Uh-huh.
And for slow releasing energy and energy throughout the day, fuel.
Huh.
And they just can be a little bit heavier than a lot of leafy greens, you know, which I obviously am a big fan of, too. I think they're some of the healthiest things you can possibly eat. But I like to maybe mix them up with some potatoes and yams, too, to get some really heavy weight in there.
Uh-huh. Do you find there are some bodybuilders who just completely ignore those greens? Because I know when I was into lifting weights, like, that was just a total afterthought. It was like protein, carbohydrates, fats, and then if you could eat a vegetable a day, that was kind of a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think it is overlooked a lot, and I think people rely on a lot of pills. Some eat, about 50 pills a day to get their different vitamins and things like that, rather than just eating a few pieces of fruit and a salad.
Uh-huh.
That's just really the way it is. And then I even had one big, huge steroid bodybuilder say that in a presentation, that, I mean, why bother filling yourself up on these just low-calorie foods like grains and fruit when you can just take a pill for it and then go back and eat more chicken or whatever. And that is the bodybuilding mentality, you know? Why, if I can just inject something or take it orally with a protein drink, or even get it in my protein drink, these vitamins and minerals, et cetera, you know, why bother? And of course, that's not my approach necessarily, and I promote the whole foods a lot, and greens are a big part of that, but that is kind of the mindset in the sport that I'm in.
Yeah. Okay. So last thing about nutrition was something that someone just asked me this question, and I didn't know what to tell him. He wanted to know about creatine for vegans and vegetarians, specifically vegans, because it seems to be something that's in a lot of animal foods, and I think the body doesn't produce very much, or I think it produces some, but not much. Is that right?
It produces some, and it produces pretty sufficient quantity. And the really unique thing about vegans and vegetarians is because it is found mostly in red meat, we're not consuming it very much.
Yeah.
Orally through our daily intake, and so when we do take some sort of supplemental creatine in powder form or even in liquid form these days, and it comes in different ways: creatine monohydrate, esterized creatine. There's different types of it. But vegetarians and vegans tend to respond really, really well to it because it's something we haven't been consuming in through diet.
Right.
And creatine basically helps retain water in the muscle, often puts on a little bit of extra strength, body weight, muscle, just to have that extra mass. You can push more weight, get stronger, you know, be more explosive, these types of things. It certainly seems to have some sort of athletic benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do recommend. I mean, in my list of, in the supplement section of the book, I have top five types of supplements I recommend: the meal replacements, protein powders, branched chain amino acids, glutamine, and then creatine's in the top five, because I think it does make a big difference, especially in vegan bodybuilding. And
okay.
It seems to be pretty pretty safe and pretty commonplace these days.
Yeah, it does.
No.
So you don't think
20 years ago, you know, maybe not as much, but
right. So definitely you don't think that's something that like that vegetarians and vegans are deficient in per se. It's just sort of something that can help if you are doing these high intensity sports.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's anything the average person needs to even think twice about. That I think it shouldn't be used at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, even as a bodybuilding athlete, I've only used creatine a tiny bit in the last 10 years because it doesn't sit well with my stomach, and which then makes it harder to train. It upsets my stomach, and training becomes harder, and just, you know, just the discomfort of it makes me not want to take it very much. And so I haven't even used it that much in the last, you know, in the last 10 years and still have bodybuilding success without it. I just think it, scientifically, it has a way of benefiting athletes who are into strength and power sports.
Right, right. All right. Well, that about does it for the kind of the sports and nutrition questions. Do you have any sort of general advice just for anyone? I mean, non-bodybuilders, kind of, because that's what most of these readers will be. Just any sort of advice for athletic vegans or anything at all? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I always have a lot of final thoughts, final ideas. And you know, and there's a couple things I guess I'll add at the end. And one is to simply do something. I mean, most of us are going to go through our lives and not be as athletic or fit or as healthy as we probably should be or certainly could be. And then we're going to come up with a lot of excuses why that is or reasons why that is or explanations or wonder why we have low energy or wonder why we have low muscle mass or why we can't seem to gain 5 or 10 pounds, why we can't lose 10 pounds or whatever. But if we can take action consistently and do something day in and day out and be aware of it and record it, document it in some way that can be evaluated later on, then we set ourselves up for something that we can make changes on. We can have some sort of point of reference, because most people will think that they exercise a lot when they really don't. You know, they remember the times they did exercise because they feel bad about the times they didn't. They don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
And if we're not really honest with ourselves, we're not really accountable, we have nothing to base our progress or lack of progress on. So what I really suggest people do is to document it for a couple weeks, maybe even for a month, and write down everything that we do athletically and do it for nutritionally as well. And this sets us up to be able to look at it and maybe even look at it with a professional, have our complete nutrition intake evaluated by a registered dietitian or a nutritionist or someone who can actually say, yeah, you're doing some things right, or you're doing a lot of things wrong, and that's why you're experiencing this, or this. Or this is why you are being successful, you need to keep doing this, or you know what, you are on a low protein consumption diet based on your type of sport, and maybe you can bump that up, or maybe you're not consuming as many calories as you probably should, that's why you're not recovering very well, and why you're maybe dropping weight rather than gaining weight, you know, is to record these things. Simply record it and record it honestly, and then we'll find out that maybe we're not working as hard as we thought, or maybe we're overtraining and we need to take a step back and evaluate something so we can actually make some real tangible progress.
Neat.
So that's definitely something I recommend, that people keep track of things. And also that people simply care about what they're doing. You know, find meaning in what they're doing. Because if it's not meaningful, and if it's not rewarding, fulfilling, or fun, it's really easy to give up. It's really easy to stop doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why work out in the first place? I mean, who cares? Why go run? I mean, you know, why lift weight? Why be vegan in the first place? But you've got to answer that, you know? And if you can find meaning in that answer, then it really, you know, compels you to work harder and to move further and to go further. And I think that's something we all need to sit back and think about. You know, why do we do what we do in the first place? You know, what does it mean to us?
Right.
So yeah, I definitely want people to think about that. because the more you care, obviously, the harder you'll work. And also, to think about the idea that, and I say this in all my talks, but a quote from Mark Twain that says, 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the thing you didn't do than by the one you did do.
Yeah.
And I always think about that, and I encourage other people to think about that. So you don't have to be saying, you know, what might have been had I made that decision then, or had I said something to someone who needed to hear it then, or had I had the courage to pursue what I was really passionate about, even though others said I probably couldn't do it. But to actually sit there and ask ourselves, what do I want to do for the rest of my life, and do it, you know, regardless of what other people think, because that's, for me, the only way I've been able to make it in anything that I'm doing. I mean, I have no business in bodybuilding, being the smallest kid in school and vegan on top of that, and having a lot of people say it's not going to work, but I knew that I could probably outwork anybody if I just cared enough.
Uh-huh.
And so I never missed a workout, you know, and the results spoke for themselves, and I ended up winning competition because I was consistent. When other people found reasons to stop, I found reasons to keep going. And I think that's true in running. I think it's true in anything, is that if we just care enough, we will outwork the competition and we'll surprise ourselves with our own work ethic. And guess what? That carries over to our relationships, the workplace, everything else that we do, because we know that we've been able to push it so hard in other areas and achieve. You bet we can do it in a workplace, academically, in relationships, in business, and it just does great things forever, you know, for anyone who does that.
Wow. Well, that's great. It's such a simple thing. That's a really just, I completely agree with you there. And it's funny that you mentioned that quote. I actually have a magnet of that very quote on my refrigerator. And all that kind of stuff really gets me going. So, and that was really why, what I really got out of your book was just that kind of attitude and those sort of ideas. So, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And
thank you. Yeah, thanks for your time, and hopefully you got some answers there for your questions. If you have anything else that wasn't clear, or you need to follow up on the email or phone call, you know, hit me up any time, and we'll make sure we get it answered. If there's anything that was unclear, or if new questions arise from your audience or whatever, or follow up questions after the interview is released, you know, let me know. I'm always accessible and happy to answer questions based on my experience or what I believe to be efficient and worthwhile. And if not, I can certainly look and find some answers for people.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. There's a lot of good stuff here, so I don't anticipate that there's anything that's unclear, but, you know, if there are any follow-up questions, I definitely will ask you. Anything else you want to mention?
Cool.
Like any just projects you're working on, or is it all vegan bodybuilding and fitness right now?
Well, let's see. Well, obviously, I mean, I just signed my book deal, which is really, really cool. And the name of the publisher is Book Publishing Company. They produce a lot of vegan books, like Becoming Vegan by Brenda Davis, and a ton of cookbooks. They've got just, I don't know, over 100 or hundreds of vegan, vegetarian cookbooks. They primarily work with vegan authors, so I'm really excited to work specifically with them and really grow together, grow their business, grow, you know, the popularity of my book. So yeah, basically, new stuff with me is the book is taken over by, or has been acquired by a publisher as of 2 days ago, and that will make it totally mainstream and in tons of bookstores around North America within 6 months or so, and in many more news stores immediately. And I'm on tour. You know, I'm on tour for Vega. I work for Vega, as you know, with Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on a show tour, basically go to all the vegetarian festivals around the country, unless they overlap, and then I, you know, I go to one, and, you know, someone else goes to the other one on behalf of Vega.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Brendan, maybe it's somebody else. So I've got that going on. I'm working on my personal development books. They've already been completed, but I'm just finishing some of the editing that will ensure that they can come out in the spring or summer, and I'll just either publish them myself and just work like crazy like I did with this one, you know, the 18-hour days that make it successful, or I will, you know, get acquired by a publisher that's a good fit, you know, for those books. So that's kind of what I'm doing, speaking tour and writing more books and making a return to training after a little break to be on tour and to write and edit. But now I'm getting back in the gym and I'm finding a lot of meaning in that and a lot of worthwhile reasons to do that. So
good. Well, good for you. Congratulations again on all the success recently and everything, and great to talk to you. I hope I get to meet you in person sometime. That'd be really cool. So
yeah, you're in the Maryland area, is that right?
Yes, a little bit north of Baltimore.
Well, you should come out September 11th, DC Veg Fest. I'll be speaking in Washington DC and running the Vega booth at the Washington DC Veg Fest on September 11th.
Okay, I'm writing it down right now. DC Veg Fest.
If you're not too far, come on out and say hi in person. And there'll be a bunch of other people giving talks. You know, Chef Tal Ronan will be giving talks. He's a chef to Oprah and Ellen. And a bunch of other speakers. And of course, you know, and there'll be an all vegan all-day festival in George Washington University.
Oh, okay. So, great.
I'll send you details, because then you could, you know, we can meet up in person, and you can meet a bunch of my vegan bodybuilding and fitness buddies who are based in DCU who will be hanging out all day, and, you know, we'll get this with a bunch of Vegas stuff as well as a thank you for making the trip down.
Wow, okay. Well, that sounds great. I'll have to bulk up before then if I'm going to be hanging around.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
All right, well,
thanks, Matt. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to the interview, and of course, we'll promote it and spread the word, and thanks for all the good work that you're doing as well. That's always appreciated, and I always enjoy catching up briefly online as well.
All right, so, good. Well, thank you again, too.
Be in touch.
All right.
You bet, man. Well, have a good one.
Okay.